We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Hey there, Knicks fans. How you doing? It's your boy, Jonathan Macri, with you for another episode of the Knicks Film School Podcast. 1 week, baby. 1 week. Less than a week, actually. Until the NBA draft, because we're coming at you on a Friday. That's exciting because the NBA draft is the unofficial kickoff to the NBA offseason. I have a feeling it is going to be a busy one and hopefully a fun one and an enjoyable one. We could not let a draft season go by without sticking with what has now become an annual tradition, and that is to have the maestro of the mock draft. I just thought of that off the top of my head. That's not bad. Jonathan Wasserman on of Bleacher Report, of course. He's putting out content every day in relation to the draft. He is as plugged in as they come. He drops some great nuggets on this episode, including one about the Knicks specifically. I'm not going to spoil it, but just I will say, you know, listen up. I think you'll appreciate it. And we get into a ton of prospects. I wish we had time to get into even more, but we tried to hit as many as possible before he had to get out of here. Before we get to that combo, though, there's a bit of news. That news involves one of the members of the Knicks front office. That would be one Scott Perry. I think The Athletic broke the news, Shams, and this was confirmed by Ian Begley. Contract extension for Scott Perry, multiple seasons, and he's going to stick on in his role as the general manager of the New York Knicks. This is tough because I think it was it about a year ago? Might have been about a year ago. I don't know. Less, more, who could tell? It's all running together. I went on, I think, a bit of a rant when it was revealed that Scott Perry was going to be coming back under Leon Rose and that he was going to stay on as the team's GM. Mostly because I thought it was a missed opportunity. I thought there were a lot of really talented, young, maybe more analytically based minds out there in the league, and that if you dangled the carrot of Knicks general manager, you might be able to get one of those folks on board, even though it would not be in a lead decision-making role, because obviously, you know, that has been something that is Leon Rose's department, as has been reported. Everybody gets to make their input, and you know, Leon makes the final call. And I think over the course of the last year, whatever it's been, my stance on Scott Perry has softened for two reasons. One, purely based on the situation that I just described. He is a voice with the New York Knicks. He is not the voice for the New York Knicks. And I think, you know, throughout his career, Scott Perry has, and again, this was all reported when he was originally hired here. Nobody had a bad thing to say about him, knows what he's doing. I mean, I've reported, I think, over the last couple of years that even people who maybe had reason not to like him were impressed by his ability to, you know, put systems in place, maintain those systems, very organized, you know, obviously professional, all of those things. And I just, the knock on Perry, I think, has always been that he might not be, you know, the best evaluator of talent. And I think if you want to take it a step further, and if you want to look at like, okay, well, how is he being like the final say? And look, we don't know whether Scott Perry ever had final say here, because he's either he was with Steve Mills, or since then he's obviously been with Leon Rose. So in terms of like the decision to bring aboard David Fizdale, the decision to, you know, build the 2019-20 roster in the way that it was built. And look, Fizdale's a large part to blame for that. I also just don't think that roster made a ton of sense. I think we could point to guys like Bobby Portis and Julius Randle this year and Marcus Morris and all these guys having successful, you know, ventures either here or elsewhere, but just the complexion of that team just didn't make a lot of sense. And I really don't. I mean, look, you could say Fizdale's all to blame. Like anybody who watched that year, I think it recognizes that, like, look, even when Mike Miller took over, it was still a team that was whatever they were, 10 games under 500. So, yeah. You know, and Perry has to own that. Perry has to own Fizdale to a certain extent. Perry has to certainly own Kevin Knox to an extent. And I would say of all of the things on Scott Perry's record, to take Kevin Knox at the spot that he took him when literally almost any of the other I just want to remind myself of the horror show that was the Knox pick. And I like Kevin Knox. I still kind of believe maybe there's a basketball player somewhere within Kevin Knox. But if you look at that draft and you recognize the fact that the next several picks in order were Mikal Bridges is about to get paid somewhere between $20 and $25 million a year. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander would have solved the Knicks point guard problems, is going to be a day one max guy this summer. When he is eligible to get extended. Miles Bridges, who is, you know, a solid player. He's certainly a rotation player in the league. I don't know if he's a starter. I don't know if he's like a backup, but he's a good player. And then there was a miss with Jerome Robinson. And then after that, Michael Porter Jr., who, you know, is he going to be a significant part of a massive trade for a Beal or a Ben Simmons or whoever? Like, who knows? But like, those were the next five picks. And you could even go a little bit down further than that. After Porter Jr. had Troy Brown Jr., miss, Zaire Smith thus far, miss. Then Dante DiVincenzo, solid player. Lonnie Walker, solid player. Kevin Huerter, talk about a guy who might get extended for upwards of $20 million a year this offseason. So, you know, we got Kevin Knox. It is what it is, but there's also a lot of positives to Scott Perry's draft record. First of all, anything that has happened since Leon Rose came aboard, Scott Perry is the general manager and he deserves to get some credit for that. How much credit? I can't sit here and tell you that, but he is a voice in the room. I would also, you know, point to the Mitchell Robinson pick. That is 100% a Scott Perry selection. That pick does not happen with Scott Perry. Without Scott Perry, excuse me, R.J. Barrett. He took R.J. Barrett. I've been a little cooler than some in terms of how much credit I'm willing to give Scott Perry for the R.J. Barrett pick, because it was the obvious pick. And like, You know, but listen, RJ looks awesome. I think, is there a world where he could become, you know, the second best player in this draft, all like long term? Maybe. Might he wind up being the fourth best player in this draft? Not willing to rule that out either. But at the very least, RJ Barrett's a damn good pro with a nice ceiling, and I think we're all happy that we have him. So that goes on Perry's ledger as well. And I think probably at this point, you would have to say that the most important thing that he did and the most impressive thing that he did is that he, as my daughter comes in here with a makeup kit, is he signed Julius Randle to what has effectively become one of the most valuable contracts in the league as it stands. Julius Randle is going to be playing for the Knicks. Here you go, Sass. For under $20 million next season. And that's a massive, massive, massive win. I think as much as you can give credit to this season, for this season, to Tom Thibodeau, you know, Randle, like this year for New York doesn't happen without Randle. And, you know, I'm giving the lion's share of the credit for Randle to Scott Perry. So let's say, you know, it's a mixed bag. He's, again, a voice. And there's the second point that I was going to say earlier and I'll say now, which is that for this front office, I think, and more than the front office, I think this whole regime, and I'm including Tom Thibodeau in that group, I think for this whole regime, the fact that they get along, the fact that, or at least they seem to get along well enough, at least to be functional. I mean, we've again heard reports of, you know, Tibbs and like Brock Aller maybe being on different sides of the different issues. You know, but even to that end, Scott Perry is a guy who's, again, is known as someone who works really well with a lot of different people. And I think it's important that in a front office where you I think you have some strong personalities, whether it be World Wide West, Tom Thibodeau, I don't know, maybe Brock Aller has a strong personality, I have no idea. But like having a guy like Perry who is able to get along well with everybody, I think that's important. He knows how to work with different people. And I think Leon Rose likes having him there, you know, as part of the team. I just, again, am happier knowing that he is not the most of the team or like the whole team or anything along those lines. So, you know, good for Scott Perry. I'm genuinely, I mean this, I'm happy for him. This Knicks season was amazing. He was partially responsible for it. Deserves all the credit in the world. So let's just hope that, you know, there's not a repeat on the Kevin Knox pick anytime soon or anything of that nature. And, you know, onwards and upwards we go.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs.
Twice a week, J.J. Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I think that's it. Don't think I'm forgetting anything. If I am, I'm sure I'll get to it soon. Because we put out a ton of pods. Spoiler alert, next week we're going to be putting out a shit ton of podcasts, and probably for free agency week too. Which is not to say that you shouldn't subscribe to our brand new Patreon, shameless plug for that. Bonus podcast every week, depending on, of course, what tier you're in. You're going to be getting some Macri mini pods over the next couple of weeks as the Knicks do some things. And yeah, so just go to patreon.com. Search for Knicks Film School if you want to sign up for that. But without further ado, let's get to my conversation with Bleacher Report's Jonathan Wasserman. Joining me now, for real this time, the busiest man this time of year in the NBA. He has all the draft intel you could possibly want or need. My favorite annual tradition, Bleacher Report's Jonathan Wasserman.
How are we doing, Jim?
Hello, Jonathan.
Everything good?
Yes, I think we're good now. Thanks to my Wi-Fi. Apparently, finally starting to cooperate. So we just talked about it a little bit before we started recording. So I'll say this to start. You hear so much stuff over the, I think, weeks and months leading up to this, to draft day. You're at the point, I'm at the point where we just want to get this thing done. How much of what you're hearing right now do you feel like is misinformation? How much do you feel like is like, okay, this can actually help me figure out where someone's going to go? And how do you personally differentiate between those two things?
Yeah, you just have to use your judgment, you know, over the years on what's nonsense and what's legitimate, and, you know, how the cycle works. Like, you knew Cade Cunningham would start out as the favorite to go number one. You knew eventually there'd be a rumor about Jalen Green and Evan Mobley getting consideration. And then you knew part of the cycle would be, well, now they're looking to listen to offers for the number one pick, and it's all going to cycle back to, they're going to take Cade Cunningham. And that's kind of how it, you know, how it works with every team. They're targeting this guy. They're looking for a guy who could help them win now. It's the same shit every year. And you just kind of have to use your judgment on what you buy and some of the sources that you're listening to and who you trust over the years. And again, it really comes down to judgment.
Okay. There's a lot of players. I feel like and you've written about this, obviously, the Knicks have one of the wider ranges in terms of players that I think most fans are focused on, because not only do they have the two picks in the 19, 21 and 32, but there's also this notion that they may try to trade up. And then I feel like there's this other notion that outside of what used to be a top five and now is maybe a top six or maybe a top seven, we'll get into it in a sec, they could get up into that next, you know, range of guys. So I feel like, you know, there's like 20 guys that in my head, I'm like, oh, well, maybe it could be this player or that player. With that being said, and I want to kind of go down your mock draft from the other day, which everybody could find on Bleacher Report. It's awesome stuff, as always. You have Book Knight, Mr. Book Knight from Connecticut, now at 6. That feels like too high for any, like, even if the Knicks were going to throw in 19, 21, and let's just say like the 23 Dallas pick, right? They're not getting up to Book Knight range, right?
No, they're not. And I'll tell you right now, I got a text last night from a team. I can confirm the Knicks are trying to trade up. They've made calls already. I don't think I'm allowed to say who they called, but it's late lottery, that range.
Okay.
And they're, and I don't know details of what they offered. But they're making calls to try and get up into that range. We could talk, you know, go back and forth about who they're targeting. 6 is too high. They're not going to be able to get there unless they throw in something unexpected. Not just the picks in this draft. I mean, that's just an assumption. You know, you never know. It really depends on like how Oklahoma City values Book Knight. You know, do they love Book Knight and see a star, or do they really not see much of a difference between, you know, 6 and 19 or whatever. But yeah, the Knicks are trying to trade up, but 6 I would think is too high for them.
The next team that I kind of have always circled as at least an outside possibility is Orlando at 8, purely because they seem like the one team in the league next year, maybe in addition to Oklahoma City, maybe Houston, although Houston's name popped up in the Dame trade rumors recently, so who the hell knows? But like Orlando seems content to just, you know, run a bunch of kids out there next year and let the chips fall where they may. Yeah. I would think if they could pick up a significant future asset, again, maybe a future first, plus take an extra couple bites at the apple, do you see that as being a range that the Knicks would be able to go up and get to?
Again, it really comes down to who Orlando values. Like if Kuminga, and again, none of these trades will happen until Orlando is on the clock, until they see who's available. Like if Orlando thinks, and in my latest mock draft, I have Kuminga going 8.
Yeah.
If they think like, well, we love Kuminga as a, you know, maybe the 6th best prospect, we can get him at 8, and we're certainly not trading. But if their targets are off the board by 8, then they can reconsider and listen to some offers.
You mentioned Kuminga. I think you've mentioned it in the past about how there's a world where he could emerge as the best player from this draft. There's also a world where he could emerge as like a guy that the troubling signs that we saw in the bubble towards the end are, you know, come to fruition. I feel like generally when a guy like this starts to slide, it's not a great sign. What's your read on Kuminga right now?
So some of the intel I've gotten or some of the background checks scouts have done, they hasn't been super assuring. You know, there's been questions about his professionalism, you know, how seriously he takes everything. There's nothing about his character or anything. Good, you know, nice kid. But I think there are questions about whether he will be a player who maximizes potential, whether does he understand how to play winning basketball, even though he talks about it, does he actually know how to do it? And then, you know, you go back and watch the film and he doesn't really, he's got tons of scoring potential, but if he does not reach that scoring potential, he's a bust. Like he's got such a little margin for error because he's not a passer. He's not an impact defender. And so he's got to reach this scoring potential. And having said that, he shot 24% from 3 and 62% from the line. So he's got a long ways to go to get to that scoring potential. And anybody that drafts him knows it's going to take a couple years for him to not just get there with his shot, but also figure out how to score within the flow of an offense. Because some of the criticism dating back to high school, he's a catch and hold guy. And he's, you know, let me figure out which move I'm going to make while the 4 other guys stand around. And he takes some bad shots and doesn't always use his impressive physical profile to his advantage. And he plays more like a 2-guard instead of like a power forward sometimes. But of course, with his perimeter skill set and his body, there is mismatch potential and obvious upside. But again, I think scouts are a little bit hesitant to buy into him actually reaching it.
That makes a lot of sense. He's just so, honestly, I had not thought of him as a name until reading your mock draft on Bleacher Report the other day and being like, wow, I wonder if the Knicks would ever, you know, try to make a swing for the fences with him. Which leads me to my next question. So we talked about Book Knight. We talked about, obviously, Kuminga. It feels like, you know, you always see Wagner. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Yeah, you
got it. Okay. Wagner up there towards the second half of the top 10. You see Moody. Obviously, Barnes has now kind of nudged himself into that top of the draft conversation. Is there, in your mind, a clear drop off after like a certain tier that kind of is in the back half of the top 10, or is it more fluid for you?
It's pretty fluid. I mean, there really is. I think this year there's that first group with Cade, Mobley, Green, Suggs, and I guess you could say Barnes is in that group. I think he is for me. And then after that, man, the difference between six and I don't know what to put a number on it, but you know, six and in the mid first round is pretty similar to me. I don't think that whoever goes six is going to be the sixth best player in this draft. I mean, it's going to be guys you can get at 14 and 15. I think that's a good value. I'd almost rather have, I'm hesitant for the Knicks to trade up because I think I'd rather take two swings at 19 and 21 than trade up to, 10 or 11 and say, put all your eggs in one basket there.
Well, so I want to pick that apart for a second because I don't know. You know me by now. I always try to talk myself into positive outcomes in the future for the Knicks. And I look at these playoffs and I look at, okay, you got the best player on this team was the 13th pick. This team was the 15th pick. This team was the, the 10th pick, and you go down the line. And I don't want to say it seems like teams are getting worse at this, but do you get where I'm like, why is it that we could look through the league and you get all these players who were essentially picked in the teens or maybe the back half the lottery or whatever, they're blowing up. And yet the hit rate on your true stars coming from the top five every year, it's you get one, one and a half, two. What do you think that is?
So my theory is, and I don't know if we're getting worse, we're just not getting better.
That's fair.
This shit is hard. And it's not just picking the talent. Everyone can identify strengths and weaknesses. It's who is going to get better in 3 years? And so, but then I think, again, back to my theory, I think the more information, there's so much information out there, and scouts now, their job description is not just evaluating talent, but they have to become detectives. And they put so much stock into character checks and background checks. And sometimes I talk to scouts and they're like, yeah, I really messed up on him. I put way too much stock into conversations with his friends and former teammates and former coaches. And I think sometimes there's just too much information, not just with background checks, but stats. There's just so much out there. Sometimes I think if we just simplify it and just watch them play a little bit and ignore the numbers and stop getting so deep with your background checks and nitpicking everything they've done since they were 13 years old. I don't know. That's just part of my theory, but your job is to go out and gather information. I think sometimes there's just too much and it kind of clouds our judgment of the basketball evaluation.
Well, to that point, speaking of detective work, we have now a 1 year sample size of what a Leon Rose type of player might be. Looking at Obi and Quickly this year, I don't know that they have much in common as players, but there seemed to be, and I'm sure you saw all their interviews, there seemed to be almost a contagious positivity emitting from both of those guys. More, it was noticeable to me at least. Again, watching their interviews, seeing how they their teammates responded to them. Let me ask this in two parts. First of all, does that check out for you in terms of just was that your part of your evaluation or was that part of what you were hearing before last year's draft? And do you think that there's anybody in this year's draft that kind of fits in, maybe not that same mold, but has some of those similar qualities?
I'll say this. The scouts I've talked to are always great kids, great group this year. And honestly, I feel like I've heard that over the past couple of years, more so in the recent couple drafts, that just really high character kids. And it's we're teaching them at an early age that they're looking for good people, as if this is a real company and nobody's going to hire somebody if they don't like them, even if they're good workers. And so I think the NBA is helped put more of an emphasis on being professionals and teaching them early. Going back to Obi and Quickly, clearly I would imagine based on the Knicks history that they're putting an emphasis on character. They want high character guys. They're not going to take a chance on a guy like Jalen Johnson. And I'm not saying he's not a high character guy, but he's got a lot of red flags in his background. So I'm sure that's part of their search process. I think when we look back at last year's draft, they looked at Obi, and I'm sure like others, they saw, they obviously, he's a great kid. I mean, such a positive guy and likable. I think they saw star potential with him. Okay. And yeah, he was the national player of the year. He led the country in dunks. He's a ridiculous athlete, and you're shooting threes, and like, it's easy to detect star potential, particularly at number 8 overall. It was, you know, I totally understood why they made the pick. I probably would have made the same pick at the same time. Okay. And with Quickly, honestly, I didn't know Quickly that well on the personal level before the draft. Obviously, I'd covered him since high school, but I guess I hadn't seen a ton of interviews with him. And having now got to know him pretty well over the past year just by watching the Knicks, sure. He clearly has, you know, he is clearly there. Like, he's a smart guy. He gets it. He's a worker. We saw that, all that, we read all that stuff about him trying to learn from Durant at USA camp.
Yep.
Like, he gets it. Like, he's a smart kid who's grounded and self-aware, and all those qualities I'm sure played a role in that pick.
Okay. So looking, I know you said everybody in this year's draft is, they seem like good kids, right? Davion Mitchell is the guy that, if you ask me to wager, let's wager a dollar right now on who the Knicks are going, might be targeting if they trade up. You'd think, because of the boxes he allegedly checks, older player, ready to come in, defense, some shot creation on the outside, and then, you know, you read things that he's seems like a great teammate, hard worker, made himself into this level of prospect.
Yep.
You have echoed a lot of the same fears that I have about Mitchell in your writing and analysis in the past, which is that, I mean, fuck, he's 23 years old, right? 23, or is he?
Well, he'll be 23 before the season.
He'll be 23 before the draft. How do you think teams are looking at him? Do you think like he is a candidate to slide? Like, where are you at on Davion?
Yeah, this is the best part about the evaluation process. You can talk to two scouts and they both have totally different viewpoints. One of them doesn't give a shit about his age, and the other one's like, he's 6 foot tall.
Do some scouts really just not give a shit about his age?
I think in recent years, they've kind of worried about it less. Especially, you know, like Cam Johnson going out and being a key part of a Phoenix Suns team when he went 11 overall. And you know, they got a lot of shit for that pick, but and they're doing the same thing with Kispert and Duarte. And they're like, some of these GMs who have pressure on them, they just want guys who can come in and contribute to the rotation on a rookie contract.
Okay.
And so, I'd say when the top 5 pick, you don't want a 23-year-old, but when you get to like the late lottery range, you know, you're not getting a star. So if there's a high likelihood, you know, a guy can come in and make an impact, you know, if he's 23, 22 years old, no big deal for them. So with Mitchell, again, I think we all know the pros and cons of Mitchell at this point. And yeah, he, on paper, he checks the boxes of somebody that the Knicks would target.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
You said you're not getting a star at that point. I mean, obviously, if you thought someone could be a star at that point in the draft, I would imagine you would probably have them higher on your list. I think I ask you this question every year, and it's never a fair question. So I'm going to ask it again. If there's someone you think you're going to look back on, or we're going to look back on, and we're all going to be wrong about, like, how the fuck did this guy not go in the top 5 of this draft? Do you, like, I know it's, again, unfair question. Who do you think that might be?
Man, I think, and it's a funny, my answer, I'm not going to say top 5, but maybe I'll say like top 10. He's not going to go top 10. But Cam Thomas from LSU,
fuck yeah,
makes me, he yes. keeps me up at night. He keeps me up at night. And for 75% of the season, I hated watching this kid play. And I still don't love watching him play. He has one of the craziest shot selections you've ever seen. He looks like he has no interest in passing to anybody. He's disinterested on defense. You know, I was watching a possession the other day where he took a fadeaway two-pointer with 26 seconds left on the shot clock. Like, you know, he's just, he does not give a shit about team basketball, about what he's supposed to do, but he's so good at making shots, and it's a shot making league. And if he goes to a team where he's got veterans around him, and they kind of naturally control his shot selection, and they get on him, and they don't let him pull some of the shit he pulled at LSU. And he's got a coach who's on him, and he really locks in. Like, this guy could be an incredible scorer. You know, he was all-time leading scorer at Oak Hill. He averaged 23 a game as a freshman. The five major conference freshmen to ever do that were Durant, Trae Young, Markelle Fultz, and Michael Beasley. And so he's just got a special ability to put the ball in the basket. And he makes you scratch your head, and he could be a turnoff to a lot of people, and that's why he's going to slip. But if he goes to a right team, he's going to slip. Fit, I mean, relatively speaking, I don't think he's going to go in the lottery. I think he's 15 to 25.
Okay. A guy that had a little bit more, I shouldn't say that. Let me rephrase that. There was another freshman this season to average 20 points a game. Again, not many major conference freshmen have done that. And his name is Sharif Cooper. Yeah. I was starting to say he had a little bit of trouble putting the ball in the basket because his 3-point shot is, let's just politely say, not what you would have wanted last year. Do you think, again, I'm asking you to generalize here, a GM would rather take a guy with special skills, which Cooper clearly has, and you've written about them a lot, and try to teach him how to shoot? Or would you rather, or do you think they'd rather take a guy like, let's say, a Duarte, who he could do everything pretty darn well, but there's not that ceiling?
Yeah, I mean, it's eye of the beholder and the team. And like, a rebuilding team is probably not going to want to take a chance, not going to want to go with Duarte. But a rebuilding team, but a rebuilding team may want Cooper, who's, you know, got some star qualities to him. And they'll have time for a shot to hopefully improve. The thing with Cooper and tying him to the Knicks, and obviously he's been a big conversation in Knicks world for this draft. If he was up to me and the Knicks stuck at 19 and 21, I'd want him with one of my two picks.
Okay.
And yeah, I know all of his flaws. But again, I think we have to put things in perspective. You're not getting a star player at 19 and 21. And if you remember that, then it's okay to draft Sharif Cooper as a change of pace guy off the bench. You know, lower the bar a little bit. Remember where you're drafting. And Cooper could hold a lot of value to the Knicks in a 15, 20 minute role, just coming off the bench, putting pressure on defenses, setting up teammates. And you say to Cooper, you know, like, get me 10 assists. I don't care if you score once, just set the table for everybody else. Hold your own defensively. By the way, I think he's better defensively than his reputation suggests. Okay. And, and then maybe if he becomes a great starting point guard, obviously that would be amazing. But at 19 and 21, you're looking for rotation players. You're looking for contributors to your eight to nine man rotation. And I think Cooper could be that guy. And so I think if you just lower the bar a little bit, remember where you're picking, I think Cooper could hold value to this particular team.
You had a great tweet the other day saying don't take green room invites as the be all end all. That said, I was a little surprised not to see Cooper's name on the 20 man list. Were you a bit surprised by that?
I sent a text to a scout the other day and I said, you know, what's going on with Cooper and Mann? I was shocked to see both of them. And he said,
Mann also.
I was not shocked that Cooper wasn't. I was shocked that Mann wasn't invited.
Really?
So I think there's a lot of like Cooper is divisive. Like you could see star qualities with him, or you could want no part of a 6-foot guard who turns the ball over, has this reputation for not being a good defender, and obviously is not a good shooter. So, I mean, I could definitely see why a team would want nothing to do with him. He's not interchangeable. He's not going to be able to guard twos. You can't play him off the ball. Like if you're going to draft Cooper, he needs the ball.
Yeah.
And if he has the ball, you know, a lot could go right, but a lot could go wrong. And so I could see a lot of teams having zero interest in Cooper. Okay. Mann is a little more interchangeable. And with his shot, I think some teams might find him more attractive.
I was about to say, you just mentioned, I don't know if I would say my favorite player that I want, because I don't have a favorite player that I really want the Knicks to draft. But Mann is a guy who every year I feel like I see tape of one guy and I'm like, why is this player not being talked about higher? Mm-hmm. So I will ask you that question. Why is Mann not being talked about higher given all the stuff that he could clearly do?
So Mann is like definitely an on-ball guy. He's got to have the ball in his hands, and he's just not a great playmaker in terms of his.
Okay, it's the playmaking.
His playmaking IQ, and so that's fine. I mean, that doesn't mean he's going to be a bust or anything. You just have to, again, his role is not starting point guard. His role is probably like what Quickley's role is.
Okay,
which is, you know, give me instant offense, streak scoring, a guy who can create for himself, but you don't want him on the ball for 30 minutes making decisions. He just doesn't have the vision and that point guard instinct to balance scoring with playmaking and see everyone around him and knowing to attack versus balancing it with passing. But yeah, there's no doubt he can create for himself. I got to see him in a private workout in Chicago, and he was just drilling logo jumper after logo jumper and smooth as could be. He had one of the best floaters in the draft. And so I think similar to Quickley, between his float game and his pull-up game, that's how he's going to make money, and that's how he's going to hold value in the league. But I don't see him as like your lead starting point guard for 30 minutes a game.
Okay. I always wonder with guys like that, like, is it possible to just teach someone how to be a proficient pick and roll passer? Am I oversimplifying it though?
No. And he was graded in the 86th percentile and as a pick and roll player this year. I think it's more of just over 30 minutes. Can he do it? Can he really balance it out? Okay. And can he, you know, a lot of his, you can see when he goes into self-creation mode, it's always looking to score. And sometimes guys like that just have that mentality, like Kobe White. It reminds me like Kobe White. Okay. Kobe White can put you up an 8 assist game every now and then, but over 82 game season playing 30 minutes, he's not going to do it all the time because he knows that he's better at looking for his shot and shooting off the dribble. And that's just what pops into his brain first.
Okay. A couple more. You've been great already. And I don't want to keep you for too long, but I have to make the most of these minutes. I feel like, have been high this year on Kai Jones out of Texas. Is that fair to say?
Yeah. I mean, also, I'd say I'm moving him down my board. And again, I think he's team dependent and, you know, where you are with your rebuild and how patient you are should depend on your level of interest in him. And I mean, he was like fifth in the country in dunks, and he didn't play too many minutes.
Yeah.
Didn't see too many touches. He just knows how to put himself in position to get easy baskets, and I like that. And I also buy his defensive versatility, kind of like Jonathan Isaac. The numbers did not add up. Like, he did not block many shots. He didn't get many steals, and he didn't make many threes. You know, with Kai Jones, it's like you hope that the highlights become regular occurrences. However, his highlight tape was short. Like, he didn't do it often. But when he did it, you're like, whoa, how is this kid not a top 10 pick? But, you know, it was only every couple of games where he had one of those flash plays. So honestly, when it comes to Kai Jones, it's like you're in guest mode of like, is he going to figure it out and put it together on an every game basis? I don't know the answer to it. But I think when you look at his floor, you see a guy who runs the floor, he gets easy baskets, and somebody who could be switchable on defense.
I guess the reason I ask about him, and you know, you also obviously have Isaiah Jackson, slight Nick connection there with Kentucky and CAA. He got the double dip.
Yeah.
And I guess if you want to throw Sengun, is that the way to pronounce it?
Sengun, yeah.
Sengun, so. Okay. In there too. I have this like crazy theory that I've been like workshopping for myself about centers being like the way running backs are in football. Like,
yes, just, definitely.
Yeah. Is that, I just feel like there's some logic to like, okay, we could pay this guy $10 million or $11 million or $12 million for the next 4 years, and he could probably be pretty serviceable for us to play 25 minutes a night within a season. Do you think teams are thinking that way at all?
The Knicks just signed Nerlens Noel for what, $5 million for 1 year? Like, I mean, it's there's definitely more. You know, these guys, like a Trey Mann, is just a lot sexier of a draft pick than Kai Jones. Although Kai Jones could go earlier, but in my mind, like, I'd rather gamble on Mann than get a dunker.
Okay.
Who in 3 years may suddenly be shooting threes and attacking closeouts.
All right.
And stuff like that. But yeah, when you see like what the Knicks did with Noel, it just, you know, they're just so much easier to get a big guy like that.
Very fair. Okay, I'm going to limit myself to asking about three more players. One, a guy I've had a fascination with, Keon Johnson. I felt like he was 6, 7, 8 in like throughout the year, and now in your latest mock again, I don't know that anybody fell more relative to like where they were at one point than Keon. What's going on? Because he, to me, strikes me as a guy like, shit, if he figures out the offense, that's the guy you want.
Yeah, he could still go, you know, 7 to 15. His range is right there. And me moving him down has a lot to do with other guys moving up. And naturally, somebody has to drop. And just conversations with a couple guys lately who are just like, he's such a great athlete, but I don't know if he knows how to play basketball. And so
it's a problem.
It's another guy who you take him and he's not going to produce much, you know, in the first couple of years. And some teams may be fine with that.
Okay.
But others may have more pressure on them. GMs may have more pressure to get some results. Like in the half court, he's just, he's not a creator and he's not a shooter. So, you know, kind of like Pat, I would say Patrick Williams and Isaac Okoro last year, you saw the flashes and he'll give you flashes this year, but you really got to hope that he puts it all together over the next couple of years. And also he's such a good athlete, but he graded in the 17th percentile in transition. Like he doesn't always know how to use his athleticism.
Okay. So
there's just a lot of questions with that and his skill level for a wing player. And for a wing player who you're thinking about top 10, I think you wish he was a little further along. I've also heard scouts a little disappointed by the fact he measured like 6'3" in size.
I was about to say, like you can't. Like he gets described as a wing, which obviously he is a wing, but he's like shooting guard size, like pretty strictly. So
yeah. He's got to be. He's not really a ball handler at all. He was one of the worst pick and roll ball handlers in the league. 6 of 23 out of pick and roll situations this year in terms of getting his own shot, and he's just not a guy you put on the ball. Not at this point, at least.
A guy who's going in the opposite direction. I think you have him. Do you have him going to the Knicks? I think you have him going to the Knicks. Yes, Mr. Murphy, Trey Murphy III out of Virginia. Does it worry you when you see a guy why is it that you could have a guy like this who is pretty much a second? I mean, I think he was mocked in the second round pretty much the whole year. And now all of a sudden he's like, oh, shit, this guy's going to be a pick in the teens. Like, what's the deal with Murphy?
Yeah, I think, you know, he's got this role at Virginia, which is a very simplified role. It's pretty much catch and shoot. And I think when we're talking about, you know, mid first round value, teams want shooters and teams want defenders. And he's a high character guy and the numbers back it up. And he's probably showing he could do a little more than what he was able to show at Virginia. Like I'm sure they're running him through, you know, off the dribble drills and workouts. And he really didn't do much off the dribble work at Virginia. I'm also told, and I still have to confirm this, that him and Duarte just got called back for second workouts with Golden State. So
who has the 14th pick?
Murphy is hot. Everybody wants, I always say they're in the draft, like interest is contagious and it snowballs. And like you hear teams, you know, you hear a lot of buzz about Murphy and then more teams want to find out more. Like, what am I missing? Let's bring him in.
Okay.
Same thing with Duarte. Those guys are rising at this point. I mean, I put that mock out yesterday morning. And at this point, I'd be shocked if Murphy is on the board for the Knicks at 19.
And wow.
And Duarte at this point, from what I'm told, and I haven't been told by the specific team, but I don't think he makes it past Washington at 15.
Wow. Okay. Shit, that's interesting. Last guy I want to ask about before I let you go is Jaden Springer, just because, again, I think you've written this in the past for Bleacher Report, and I think you mentioned it more recently. The range on him seems to be very all over the place. I tried to watch a decent amount of Tennessee last year, and I was waiting for, like, pop moments from him, and he didn't really give you those pop moments.
Yep.
Do you think that's why he's fallen from like a potential top 10 pick to a guy who is probably going to go much later?
Well, I will say most of the year, I guess draft Twitter, and I guess that's a real thing, was higher on Springer than the NBA.
Okay.
Most of the year I've heard like fringe first rounder. So I think the narrative was kind of off. If anyone thought that he was by NBA thoughts that he was a lottery guy, but yeah, like you said, he doesn't always pop off the screen. And from what I'm hearing workouts, he's now fully healthy. His ankle, which knocked him out a couple of games, I'm told it limited him throughout the season. And then he showed up to the combine, had the fifth highest standing vert and the sixth highest max vertical, 41.5 inches. And to me, I think Springer is a lottery guy as long as you can be patient. And
okay.
I think D'Anthony Melton is the comparison I've heard and I've used. Not a star player, but a guy who has a chance to be a star role player just by, you know, playing opportunistically, making the right decisions on and off the ball. Good spot up shooter, very strong playing through contact, very good defender at both backcourt spots. And one of the youngest kids to draft. And I think scouts have also talked about, they hate how he was used at Tennessee. Like he was never put in ball screen situations. He didn't have that many opportunities to create. And so people are all over the place on him. He didn't get that green room invite. I'm guessing he's going to be available when the Knicks pick.
Okay.
You know, is he the right pick for the Knicks? I like him in a vacuum. I don't know if he's the right pick for the Knicks because I think they need someone to put a little more pressure on the rim. but he's a very fundamentally sound, well-rounded player.
All right, Jonathan Wasserman, before I let you go, I'm giving you my dollar, but you must wager it on one player that will be wearing a Knicks hat by the end of Thursday night. Any player, you had three picks to work with, so you could really go a number of directions here.
Man, I'm going to go with, I think they're going to go out of their way to get Trey Murphy.
You really? Oh, I predicted that today. That's yes. Good. Yeah, I wrote that in my newsletter that if I had to put a buck on it right now, it'd be go up and get Murphy.
He's the hot guy. I don't know if the Knicks are going to lose their, you know, Burks and Bullock. I'm not really sure what's happening with them, but he's the hot guy right now. He shoots, he defends. He's a really high character guy. I could just see them very interested in him. And as I think you reported that he worked out for them, right?
Yeah, him and
Trey.
Who was it? Yeah, him and Trey. That was probably a fun workout to watch.
Yeah.
Bassey. Is Bassey going to get drafted?
He will. I wouldn't be surprised if the Knicks gave him a look at 32.
Really?
I've talked to scouts who think he's going to get first round looks. He's
holy shit.
I think he's better than what. I don't know where he's going to go. He could go anywhere, but I think he's pretty good. He's big time athlete, monster wingspan. And I think
he's two-time defensive player of the year. I mean, it's Conference USA, but still, it's something.
He's far more skilled than Mitch. He's obviously not the athlete that Mitch is, and not as mobile around the perimeter. But if they're looking for a center who can block shots but give you a little offense, Bassey's an interesting option at 32.
Yeah, look at that. A little bonus tidbit here. Jonathan Wasserman, before I let you go, can you let folks at home know where they could find you and your stuff?
Yeah, Bleacher Report, NBA Draft Wasserman on Twitter. You know, we'll have content out every day next week. And I'll be on the NBA TV mock draft show Tuesday night. So you could check that out.
Folks, you're going to want to go to your Twitter. And I didn't just do this. I always have your notions. There's a little bell there. Do you see the little bell? You're going to push the little bell for Jonathan Wasserman. You're allowed to turn it off after Thursday night. I personally keep it on all year. You're one of my go-to. You really, you are my go-to for all things draft.
Thanks, buddy.